Omaha Public Radio presents a special program on Noon Forum. We'll hear the keynote address given at the 2013 Nebraska Broadcasters Association Annual Convention. The guest speaker will be Herman Cain, nationally syndicated broadcaster, former president and chief executive officer of Godfather's Pizza, former president of the National Restaurant Association, former member of the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, and former candidate for the Republican nomination for President of the United States. He'll speak on the topic, The Power of Broadcasting, to Inform, Entertain, and Inspire. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, August 15, 2013, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Nebraska Broadcasters Association, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Angela Stenger, 2013 chairman of the Nebraska Broadcasters Association.
Many of you know of Herman Cain from his time as the president and CEO of Godfather's here in Omaha. His success led him to the presidency of the National Restaurant Association and then a position on the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. Today, as a former Republican candidate for the presidency, he is still very active and outspoken voice for conservative issues. In January, he began his new nationally syndicated radio program, The Herman Cain Show, heard on many stations from 9 a.m. till noon Eastern, and just finished doing the show live from Omaha this morning. This new direction, along with the newly formed CainTV.com, has prompted him to establish Cain Media Division of the New Voice Incorporated. More recently, he joined the Fox News team as a regular contributor in his continuing effort to be one more voice of intelligent thinking in America. Please give a warm MBA welcome to Mr. Herman Cain.
Thank you. Thanks, Angie, for that introduction. And I would like to thank the association for inviting me to be here today. I'm honored to be back home. As someone said, how did it feel? It felt like coming back home because I lived here for 14 years. We have some deep roots in this area, in the state, in the city, and we always look forward to coming back to Nebraska. Let it be borne in mind that the tragedy of life does not lie in not reaching your goals. The tragedy lies in having no goals to reach for. It's not a calamity to die with dreams unfulfilled, but it is a calamity to have no dreams. The American dream is under attack. The American dream is under attack because we have become a divided nation. We are divided politically. We're divided economically. And we are divided socially. I hate to be the bearer of bad news before I give you some good news. But the United States of America is not united anymore. Politically, the political parties have never been further apart. Bipartisanship is non-existent in Washington, D.C. That's one of the reasons that I had a temporary moment of insanity and ran for president. Because like you and like your member listeners and like your constituency, people are frustrated with the fact that nothing gets solved or fixed in Washington, D.C. Nothing. Name something that was fixed during your lifetime coming out of Washington, D.C. Time's up. Social Security started in 1935. When Social Security started in 1935, the description of this old age assistance program could be written on one sheet of paper, front and back, in 1936. Today, it is a mess that is about to go bankrupt. Medicare started in 1965. It cost $6 billion to roll it out. We were told as citizens in 1965 that in 25 years, by 1990, Medicare was going to cost $12 billion. That's all. A mere $12 billion. In 1990, 25 years later, Medicare did not cost $12 billion by then. It didn't cost $10 billion. It didn't cost $50. It cost $109 billion. A 900% miss. How many of you all would still be in business if you missed your budgets by 900%? You wouldn't be in business. And yet, the people that we elect still refuse to fix the problem. There is a solution for Social Security, but politics get in the way. There's a solution for Medicare, but politics continues to get in the way. And now we have another program called the Unaffordable Care Act. If you are calling it the Affordable Care Act, you are fooling yourselves and you know it. This morning on my radio show, you know, I really get tired of having to talk about this every day. But every day there is a new revelation about what's wrong with the Unaffordable Care Act. Every day. This morning I did a little special feature during one of the segments called 9 Reasons to Be Outraged Over Obamacare. That was supposed to be sort of humorous, but y'all didn't react. 9, get it? If it'll make you feel any better, I'm going to give you some good news later, but I got to give you all of the bad news in order to get you prepared for it. 9 reasons, but I'm not going to give you all 9. I'm just going to give you 3 of the reasons why people ought to be outraged over the Unaffordable Care Act. I refuse to call it the Affordable Care Act any longer on my radio show or in any of my appearances. I'm calling it what it is, the Unaffordable Care Act. So let me just give you 3 of the reasons. Number 3 is what Nancy Pelosi said before they passed it.
We have to pass it and then tell you what's in it.
That's an insult to the American people. We have to pass it and then tell you what's in it. Well, we are now finding out what's in it, and a lot of us do not like it. There's an old saying, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. 80% of Americans were already getting their health insurance through their employer. So why not fix that 10%, because the other 20%, half of them had their own insurance. Back in the early 1990s when I was fighting Hillary Care out of Omaha, Nebraska, I reminded the business world and I reminded the politicians, the business people listened, but the politicians didn't listen, that if you have a leak in the roof and you know that the roof is leaking, you don't blow up the building to fix the leak in the roof. That's what our elected representatives have done with health care. So we have another dysfunctional program, even before it gets out of the starting blocks. So the third reason people ought to be outraged, you're going to pass something that you haven't read, your colleagues haven't read, you don't know what's in it, and they're writing the rules and making it up as they go. You ought to be outraged by that. I am. Reason number 2, the Cadillac tax. The Cadillac tax. In other words, if you have a health insurance plan that survives the onslaught of Obamacare and you're not forced into an exchange, and if your plan happens to be more generous than what the government tells you to do, you have to pay a tax for being able to afford something better than mediocrity. You can go out and buy a Cadillac car, which has been a symbol of excellence in this country for a long time. I remember my dad, who walked off of a farm at the age of 18, literally with the clothes on his back. Dad had some dreams. One of his dreams was to one day to own a Cadillac car. And he did. That was his American dream. But you can go out and buy a Cadillac car if you can afford it. You can eat out a Cadillac quality restaurant if you can afford it. You can wear Cadillac quality shoes and clothes if you can afford it. You can live in any neighborhood in America with Cadillac quality if you can afford it. But you cannot buy health insurance above a certain level, even if you can afford it. That ought to make people outraged for the government to want to tell you how good of an insurance policy you can have. And then the number one reason that ought to cause people to be outraged, the statement that if you like your health insurance, you can keep it, a lie. But the administration has made an exception where people that are members of the political class, they can keep their insurance, but the rest of us schmucks cannot. That ought to make you outraged. I know it makes me outraged. Oh, they tried to spin it a certain way by saying, listen to this, watch this. Oh, but the federal employees are going to go into one of the exchanges. Don't stop there. But the government is going to supplement their exchange policy with tax dollars to move it back up to the quality that they had it while it was part of the federal health insurance plan. In other words, they get to keep their insurance. We don't get to keep our insurance if you're trying to follow all of the rules with the Unaffordable Care Act. That's just three reasons that people ought to be outraged. Why hasn't it been totally stopped? Politics. Why haven't some of the things that's wrong with it been fixed while they're trying to force implementation down our throats? Politics. We are politically divided in this nation like we've never been before. We have solutions to problems, folks. Politics keeps getting in the way. We're economically divided. We're economically divided on what we need to do in order to fix this economy. Some people are being told that there's nothing wrong with this economy, that it's turned around. It's not growing fast enough, but at least it's growing. Yes. A snail is running. That's about the size of this growth. From 1995 to 2005, over a 10-year span, the gross domestic product, which is the measure of economic growth and activity in this country, grew by in excess of 3%, about 3.4% to be exact. That's typical for the decade of the 90s, the decade of the 80s. From 2005 to 2012, the GDP growth in this country averaged 3.1%. Typical. And in 2013, since January, the GDP growth has been 1.7% with the new calculation. You see, the other thing that they do, if they don't like the number, they'll change the methodology. It was 1.1% under the old methodology. But now they can report 1.7%. We're economically divided because people are being told that this economy is turned around and this economy is growing. It's not. Because a lot of people are clueless as to the numbers. They're clueless as to the meaning of the numbers. They're clueless as to what it would take to supercharge this economy. So we're economically divided. And the people in this country are economically divided in terms of what they think, what they believe is what is required in order to achieve happiness in America. You have two classes, not the haves and the have-nots. You have the people in this country that believe in freedom, the freedom to pursue happiness, based upon your own individual beliefs, your own individual aspiration, motivation, and determination. The freedom to risk your investment and your capital in order to be able to build a business and make it successful. The freedom to accumulate assets and spend them as you see fit. And then you have the people that believe in free stuff. We're divided. People who believe in freedom and people who believe in free stuff. Over 7 million jobs have been created within the last 4 years. That doesn't count all of the jobs that were lost, which exceeds that. 7.2, I think, is the number. And the number of people that are now on food stamps, or the number of people that increased in the last 4 years, 2 to 1. For every 1 new job, 2 people went on food stamps. What's wrong with that picture? Don't worry, young man. I'm going to tell you something good in a minute. I mean, you know, I know this is depressing shit. Somebody's got to tell you the truth. And you have a responsibility to tell your listeners the truth. That's the power of broadcasting, which gets to my topic. I hadn't gotten there yet, and I'm still trying to build my case. So we're divided economically, and I could go on and on. The unemployment rate is a fictitious 7.4%. The real unemployment rate, if you add in the people who stop looking and you add in the people that are unemployed, is over 11%. And it turns out that the black unemployment rate in America is nearly double that of the national average, 14%. And Harry Reid had the audacity last week, the audacity earlier this week, majority leader, to say that he hopes that if people disagree with President Obama, he hopes, he said that 3 times. That is not because he's African American. In my latest video that you can find at HermanCain.com, I basically call Senator Reid out for such an insulting, racist remark. In fact, I recommended him publicly for an honorary membership in the Congressional Black Caucus, since he's so good at playing a race card. It's part of what they call distraction politics. So we're divided economically, politically. We're divided socially. We're not divided socially amongst the people you work with, the people you live around, the people you play golf with, the people you go bowling with, the people you go church with, we're not socially divided in our everyday lives. We are socially divided in the mind of the media. Not all. Some. When I was growing up in Atlanta, Georgia, I talked about this the other day. I was being interviewed for a magazine that's coming out soon, and they're going to put me on the cover. talk about something that I'm launching this month. And they were talking about what it was like to be poor growing up in the South. And my response was, I didn't know we were poor. We lived in a half a house, six-room house with three rooms on one side, three rooms on another side, with a wall going down the middle. We lived in half of it. We used to say to my dad worked three jobs. He was a barber, a janitor, and a chauffeur. He worked three jobs all at the same time. That didn't make us rich, but we had food on the table. We had a roof over our head, and Dad was saving for his dream. But you see, the reason that we didn't know we were poor because we didn't have people on the TV every day telling us we were poor and we were victims. So we were happy poor people and didn't know it. Because we didn't have anybody telling us that the man has been holding us back. But see, part of the problem today is you have a lot of people who believe in the doctrine of free stuff. And class warfare is one of their major tactics. One of their major tactics. So yes, we're divided politically, economically, and socially. So what are we going to do about it? Well, we can either be a part of the solution or we can be a part of the problem. I choose to be a part of the solution. I believe that most of the people in this room choose to be part of the solution. Here's what we have to do. We have to take public service to another level, not just PSAs. But I believe that in this industry, and I'm a baby in the broadcasting industry compared to many of you. I was on Gary Settlemyer's show this morning for a few minutes. Gary has been in the business 36 years, a giant in this industry. He used to interview me when I was living here in Omaha, Nebraska. 36 years he's been in this industry. I have been on the radio. I was on the radio for 3 years at night before I ran for office, full-time three-hour show. And then when I ended my campaign and went back on the radio, I've only been back on the radio now for 6 months, 9 to noon, Monday through Fridays, on WSB out of Atlanta. You can look it up on my website, HermanCain.com, HermanCain.com. And we are on 130 affiliates around the country. None in Nebraska. I just thought I'd throw that out, Angie. None in Nebraska. And my radio show is very similar to my speeches like this one. So this is what you get on the radio as well as in a speech. Here's what we can do about it. I believe that we have a responsibility to do three things in order to help educate those that are clueless. We're not going to save everybody. Everybody's not going to see the light. Solutions are no longer going to come out of Washington, D.C. in order to save America and fix things. Solutions are going to have to come from the people, from the ground up. It was Thomas Jefferson that said that when people have the right information, they will make the right decisions. Right now, too many people are not making the right decisions because they don't have the right information. And therein lies number one of the three things that we have to do. Provide people the right information. Accurate information. Not just the news. If you just report the news, that's the what. You got to report the why. Congress rejected the president's proposal to invest in another green energy company. Why? Report the why. Because a lot of people aren't going to report the why. You want to know why they rejected it? Because of the 12 green energy companies that we'd already wasted money in that went bankrupt. Give people the right information and let them make the decision. You don't have to tell them what to do. Give them the right information. Information is the what and the why of this business. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is owned by the same parent company that owns WSB, which I work for, Atlanta Journal-Constitution is one of the local newspapers that's going through the same problems as a lot of newspapers. And one of the big problems that a lot of newspapers are having is that people aren't reading them anymore. It's not just because they're getting their information from the radio, from TV, from the internet. It's that the newspaper does not quickly answer the question, what happened and why? What and why? That's the kind of information that we have to provide in order to be a part of the solution. I believe that broadcasting has the unique ability to provide, secondly, inspiration. Inspire people to believe that we can get things back on the right track. I get too many calls to my radio show of people who have given up, who do not believe that we can change anything that comes out of Washington, D.C., who believe we've already crossed that magical tipping point where the free stuff people are in charge and they're going to remain in charge. I get way too many calls. Had a caller yesterday, Mr. Kane, the last time I called about a month ago, you gave me a pep talk that got me back fired up. He said, give me another pep talk, because every day when I turn on the news, I get depressed all over again about our ability to be able to change things. So I had to give him another pep talk. I said, you remember the last thing I told you the last time I talked to you about believing that we can change things? He said, yeah. It was a quote by a lady who was a survivor of the Holocaust. She was about to go into a gas chamber to be killed. Her name was Berta. When the Allied soldiers rescued them and told them the war was over and that she didn't have to go into that gas chamber, she was interviewed by a reporter later, and the reporter asked, did you ever give up hope? And she said, no. Even while you were standing there about to go into the gas chamber? She said, no, I didn't give up hope. The reporter asked, why? She said, giving up is a permanent solution to a temporary condition. The caller said, thank you, Mr. Kane, I needed that. No matter how bad the news is that you report, folks, try to find a way to inspire your listeners. We cannot accept defeat as a nation. The founding fathers didn't accept defeat. They didn't accept defeat. Trust me, they didn't have a poll that said 100% of the people wanted to fight the British in order to gain our independence. It only takes a few passionate patriots, folks, to change things. You're part of those passionate patriots. You have a very powerful tool at your disposal, the airwaves. I grew to appreciate it even more after I became a part of this industry and the feedback that I got. So make what you do not only informational, but also inspirational. And thirdly, the third thing that you do, that we do, you have the ability to do with the resources that you have. Entertain. Make people smile. Someone once said, in fact, my executive producer told me one time, I've been working with the same executive producer now for about 7 years. Great team I have. I've been blessed with a great team. He said, if you're going to deliver people bad news, make them laugh. It's not a laughing matter. but bring a smile to people's face. That's what programming is all about. That's what programming is all about. And so to be a part of the solution, I have decided, and I know that many of you have decided, that you're going to inform by answering the what and the why. You're going to inspire by reminding people that giving up is not an option. Failure is not an option. Not in these United States of America. That's not in our DNA. And thirdly, some of you all heard me say this during the debate. America needs to lighten up. Learn how to smile every once in a while. Because you see, even though we have a lot of issues and a lot of challenges, there still are a lot of things that we can be thankful for. A lot of things to smile about. Every day you hear about an unfortunate tragedy where somebody died, got killed, took their own life. You report those things all the time. And one of the things that I think about whenever I hear that, a good friend of mine I had dinner with last night reminded me of another friend of ours who died a couple of years ago from cancer. And it just reminded me how blessed I am that 7 years ago I was detected with stage 4 cancer. I had cancer in my colon, cancer in my liver. Because it was detected early and I didn't have to wait until the government told me I could go and get these tests. It was detected early enough that I went through chemotherapy and I had to then have double surgery. They put me through chemotherapy for a month to see if the chemo medication would reduce the tumors, and they did, so they would know what to do after the surgery. And so I had surgery in the summer 7 years ago where they removed 30% of my colon and 70% of my liver. And so I only had 30% of my liver left in order to then go back into chemotherapy to make sure that the cancerous cells were gone. And when my doctor told me that he was going to take out 70% of my liver, and I'm only going to be left with 30%, my first reaction was, "Doc, you mean I can live off of a sliver of liver?" He said, "Yes." He said, "The liver is the only organ in the body that grows back." I missed that in biology. I didn't know that. So I'm happy to tell you today, because I had a Cadillac healthcare plan, thank you very much, my liver has grown back 100%, and I am now 7 years totally cancer-free because of the greatest healthcare system in the world. If I had lived in Canada, I'd probably be dead. If I'd lived in Great Britain, I'd probably be dead. If I'd lived in Cuba, I probably would have been dead. We don't need to destroy the best healthcare system in the world. We need to remove the barriers to prevent it from going down. So make sure you inform, inspire, and make people laugh every once in a while. Because that's what life is all about. Every time I hear about somebody that has died for whatever reason or another, I'm just thankful that I'm still here and that I can make people smile every once in a while. That's one of the other advantages that you have and we all have being in this business. So the American dream is under attack, yes. There are a lot of things that we can do, you can do, in order to bring it back. And I'm reminded of a poem from a movie. I didn't see the movie. It was called Pokemon. But the poem from the movie inspired me about believing in the American dream, about believing in this great nation, believing in the people of this nation. When it said life can be a challenge, life can seem impossible. It's never easy when there's so much on the line. But you can make a difference. There's a mission just for you. Just look inside and you will find just what you can do. Just look inside and you will find just what you can do with all of these vast resources that you have. Be a part of the solution. Help to restore the American dream and help to put the word united back into the United States of America.
You've been listening to a special program on Noon Forum. We've heard the keynote address given at the 2013 Nebraska Broadcasters Association Annual Convention. The guest speaker has been Herman Cain, nationally syndicated broadcaster, former president and chief executive officer of Godfather's Pizza, former president of the National Restaurant Association, former member of the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, and former candidate for the Republican nomination for president of the United States. He spoke on the topic, The Power of Broadcasting, to inform, entertain, and inspire. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, August 15, 2013, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Marty Riemenschneider, President and Executive Director of the Nebraska Broadcasters Association, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. We're going to conclude this special program as we celebrate today the man whose life is remembered on this national holiday, Martin Luther King Day. Mr. Cain would agree that his accomplishments were at least partially made possible by the lifelong dedication and work of Reverend Martin Luther King, himself, like Herman Cain, a black Republican. Let us listen now to Dr. King's most famous and inspirational speech, I Have a Dream, given at the conclusion of the March on Washington on Wednesday, August 28, 1963.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content, we'll have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people, for many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day Even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of a new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Brought us thus far on the way, thou who hast by thy mind led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray. Lest our feet stray from the places our God where we met thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand true to our God, true to our native land. And let us march on till victory is won.
Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.